Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Finance. The time is 3:04 p.m., June 6, 2016. And if you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska at the Bill Ray Center, room 230. You're joining Senate Finance. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this afternoon, Co-Chairman Kelly.
Hello.
Vice Chairman Michicki.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good afternoon.
And Senator Olson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
On today's agenda is SB 128. It's an act relating to the permanent fund corporations and the earning of the Alaska Permanent Fund and the Earnings Reserve Account relating to the management of the Budget Reserve Fund. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, may I have a motion, Senator Michicki?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 128, Finance 29-GS2859/U before the committee as our working document.
All objects for purposes of discussion. Brief at ease while we pass out the documents. We're back on the record. The CS for Senate Bill 128 Finance /U is before the committee. It should be posted online, and those in the audience have it. Ms. Kramer, could you explain the changes to the CS?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Laura Kramer, staff to Senator McKinnon.
I'm going to go from the document, the sectional analysis. And in this document, the changes to the CS in front of you are bolded and underlined. The first change can be found in Section 8, which is on page 4, lines 26 through 28 of the CS. And this simply excludes the Amaretta Hess funds from the calculation of the POMV distribution. The next change is Section 9, page 5, line 18. This states that the Amaretta Hess funds, which are deposited into the capital income fund, are not available for distribution under the POMV calculation. Section 11, there's a new section established in this section, page 6, lines 8 through 18. This is what we would call a savings rule. And any surplus funds that the state brings in would be set aside in savings, 50% to the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund and 50% of those funds to the permanent fund corpus. There are three other changes that you won't see highlighted in your sectional analysis, but rather on your summary of changes document. The old Section 4 was removed, which originally we were repealing or removing from statute the Capital Income Fund. We are no longer doing that. We're keeping the Capital Income Fund. Those Amaretta Hess funds will still go into the Capital Income Fund. Additionally, for the $1.2 billion revenue limit, we removed the inflation adjustment calculation on that, so it's just a strict $1.2 billion revenue limit. And then lastly, in the Section 23, the effective date of the bill, the management of the CBR will transfer to the Permanent Fund Corporation from the Department of Revenue, effective July 1st of this year, 2016. With that, Madam Chair, those are the changes.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, I'll withdraw my objection. Is there any further objection on the adoption of the CS for Senate Bill Number 128, Finance /U? Seeing and hearing none, the CS is adopted and before the committee. With that, I'd like to take a recess until 3:30. We're in recess. we're back on the record. I just wanted to provide enough time for staff and committee to review the CS that was adopted and before us. If I can invite Rob Carpenter and Alexi Painter to the microphone. First, to committee members, we find ourselves in a very difficult position with about $1 billion worth of revenue and about $4.5 billion worth of expenses. We have a huge gaping hole in Alaska's budget. And right now, that proposed fill comes directly from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. And should that draw happen, it would place Alaska with an opportunity cost loss of somewhere between $50 and $200 million. The administration is asserting that there's $200 million worth of opportunity cost loss should the budget remain funded from the CBR. Mr. Carpenter, do you have any comments on the opportunity cost of $3 billion?
You kind of caught me off guard there, Madam Chairman. The opportunity cost of not filling the gap?
The draw from the CBR of $3 billion, if we did nothing else and we took the, as it exists now under the budget that was passed, if we take the $3 billion from the CBR and spend it versus adopting anything else, the administration has asserted a $200 million opportunity cost.
I understand. Madam Chairman, I would actually argue that under the plan you're proposing here, the cost is negligible due to the fact that you're transferring management of the CBR to the Permanent Fund Corporation.
Thank you. We'll have Commissioner Hoffbeck talk about the administration's assertion. The bill before us today is looking at the use of our pooled assets. And you have several slides prepared by Legislative Finance. If you could walk through those slides for the committee and the people of Alaska.
Yes, ma'am. For the record, Rob Carpenter, Legislative Finance Division. The first slide is, do you guys have them all in order, I assume? The first slide is what you'd call a status quo scenario. If there is no action on behalf of the legislature or on the part of the legislature, would you like me to walk through each quadrant, or do you guys have a general understanding how these are working, Madam Chairman?
Mr. Carpenter, for those in the audience and those at home, if we could walk through each quadrant. So there are four criteria that we're evaluating the success of any particular proposal. One is the actual cost of the operating budget itself. One is looking at the reserves and how our reserves are affected by any choice. The third is looking at the dividend check that goes out to the people of Alaska. And the fourth is the overall health of the permanent fund for those following. So if we could start looking at the upper left-hand corner of that document and talking about the budget.
Sure, Madam Chairman. So as you said, the upper left corner is the it depicts the unrestricted general fund budget in the black bold line, and below that you're seeing how you're filling that budget with revenue or other sources. The blue bars being the current existing revenue in statute. If you look at particularly at the column for FY17, there is a large orange bar which would be filling the remainder of the budget with the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which you have done already in the operating budget. The other years, you proceed along with the CBR usage in 18. By FY19, the CBR would be projected to be eliminated, and you would have you'd be forced into some other use to fill the deficit. In this picture, we're assuming you would access the earnings reserve account because there are no other options. And that would eventually decline and be gone by FY23, leaving you with no way to fill the deficit at that point under this scenario. There are still some small red bars because you would still have earnings in the earnings reserve account, but there would be no balance to fully fill the deficit.
Mr. Carpenter, does this point to where the administration has asserted the dividend program itself and the payments to the people of Alaska are in jeopardy if the earnings reserve falls to zero, or the corpus of the fund is throwing off such a small amount of money that there wouldn't be earnings in the reserve account to be able to pay dividends?
Madam Chairman, the dividend checked quadrant in the upper right does not actually depict the dividend going to zero. It's showing just the status quo dividends. But however, if you look at the lower left quadrant, you'll see the balances of our reserves, and the orange being CBR on top would be the earnings reserve account. Earnings, or the CBR, would be gone by FY18, and the earnings reserve would be gone by FY21. Thereby, something would have to give, as in the dividend would be gone. Would have
questions
to be eliminated.
Questions from committee members. Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Carpenter, the part of the input to this slide is that spending remains the same, correct? Government spending remains the same.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. For the most part, yes, we have. If you look in the middle, there's some operating growth variables that are all set at zero. There is some growth built into the capital budget, and some, I think, perhaps in the, oh, the tax credits. I'm sorry. There's also the oil and gas tax credits are assumed to be paid out at $250 million a year. We had to make some assumption, given that there's earned credits of projected around $2 billion over the next 8 years. So those are some assumptions. But relatively speaking, that black line is flat.
So just I'm going to look forward to listening to the administration describe how they came up with the idea of the opportunity cost, what went into that calculation. But, I mean, one thing's for certain. If spending remains the same, there's no opportunity cost there. If it was reduced by $100 million, it could be argued as an opportunity cost, or $200 million or $300 million. So I was just wondering what this model reflected as a status quo spend as well at the levels we have. But I just want to remind folks that you do have opportunities here going into next year to reduce the size of that budget. And again, I look forward to hearing the calculations from the administration.
Senator Kelly.
Rob, did you have any scenarios built that show what happened in the 17 budget as your baseline going forward? I think this assumes the spring forecast and the 16 management plan, or the 16 actual management plan going forward as your spending baseline. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, it pretty much takes the 17 budget as it is in the conference committee and the capital budget.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yep.
Good. Thanks.
Senator Olson, and thank this is the status quo. We're looking at the status quo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carpenter, as you look at the bottom right here, the problem is the permanent fund remains flat for the next essentially 10 years. You feel that is fairly accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it's interesting. It's given the use of the earnings reserve account, there you would be earning money, but you'd be pulling from the ERA in an amount that would basically flatten it out. And once the ERA is exhausted in FY21, you actually see the permanent fund growing again. But that, I mean, it's kind of the ERA would be gone, even though the principal would be growing.
Madam Chair, the last question that I have is that as you look at that, you know, that was what I think is bothersome to me, in spite of where you say the ERA is coming from. But as you look at what's happened over the past, you know, over the past 10 years or so, except for the down dip in 2008, there's been a significant rise in the corpus of the permanent fund. And this has no way of outdoing itself, even though the ERA is down.
Through the chair, I'm not sure how to answer that other than to say we're assuming a certain rate of return based on the asset allocation the permanent fund has.
No further question, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If we could move on to page 2.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Page two is the same four quadrants. However, it's assuming SB 128 as you have written it. As you can see in the upper left corner, the budget is remaining the same. There's a new bar, which is the green bar, which depicts use the percent of market value payout to the general fund. And that significantly fills the budget deficit. You'll see in the lower left quadrant that the CBR, life of the CBR extends to FY23. The earnings reserve account is healthy through 25. On the upper right, you have the dividend check, which in the bill is set at $1,000 for the first 3 years. And after that, it falls into the formula, which equates to roughly $1,000. And you can see in the bottom right quadrant the balance of the permanent fund itself with a larger balance of over $60 billion versus the status quo scenario. One thing to note is for FY17, even though you have the POMV payout of almost $2.4 billion, there's a remaining deficit of $1.5 billion. You can see that in the table in the lower left, which would be filled in FY17 with the CBR.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. So if I would ask committee members to go back to page one and look at the blue bar on the left side of the page, years to exhaustion four, years to exhaustion of the budget reserves three. Do you see where I'm saying? Pointing to, and then if you go to this proposed plan, you look at years going out and they grow, they don't go down because of the change in the use. And then for those that are concerned about downward pressure on the budget, if you go up to the deficit line and compare the status quo, which shows FY17 as status quo with a loss of about $3.3 billion of draw, and you go to the proposal in the CS for 128, and that deficit goes down to $1.6 billion that would have to be taken from draw. So that's what we're looking for, is extending the health of our reserves out, as well as the, if you look on the other side of the, to the right on the blue, we're looking at how we keep the permanent fund and the corpus of the permanent fund healthy. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In both scenarios, you're looking at a capital budget of about $185 million from 2018 to 2025. Can you remind the committee of where we are today on the capital budget?
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, you're at $96
million. So that could double the size of the...
Yes, sir.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just for clarification, that 96 is state money, and there's a federal match of, what's it, 10 to 1 almost? So theoretically speaking, if you double your state spend, you should probably double your federal take, too. No, not necessarily?
No. We've tried to leverage as many dollars as possible with the money that we've allocated from the general fund, but there is not an excess of federal funds out there. That's mostly DOT match, and so there might be a bit of an upward movement, but you certainly should not double that. Mr. Carpenter, is that accurate?
Madam Chairman, that's 100% accurate. You have leveraged every federal dollar you could.
And doubling the capital budget over that period is a good start.
Senator Hoffman, many Alaskans believe exactly as you've said, that the capital budget, if it remains low for too long, it means increased costs, because it means you're deferring maintenance. And by deferring maintenance, instead of just patching your roof, you might need a whole new roof. So state assets are struggling right now in maintaining repairs on them. Senator Bishop, do you have a comment on that deferred maintenance?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would echo the sentiments that the deferred maintenance problem's not getting any better. and it'll only get worse if we don't continue to stay be diligent with our deferred maintenance and our capital budgets. But with that being said, that also should give people pause that going forward, not to be real reticent about shiny brand new objects, but fixing what we have before we go to the shiny new objects.
Thank you. Ready to move on to the third slide? Mr. Carpenter, you've showed me this slide before, and it's a little bit busy, so if you could outline it for the folks here and then the people following at home. Lots of circles.
Sure, Madam Chairman. So the idea is this shows the cash flow of the bill. All the circles are a little confusing, but if you look closely, it's not too bad. The idea is that you have the permanent fund principal. I'm just going to go through the circled area at the moment. The permanent fund principal, the earnings reserve account, and the CBR, and you have them all invested in one pool, and that's the outermost circle. And within that large investment pool, you have the permanent fund, which is in green, the green circle, and you have your budget reserves, which is in the blue circle. Okay, so, and the other cash flows are, you have your basically your royalty being split into the public school trust, the principal, the permanent fund, and the general fund. You have your production tax and your other UGF revenue flowing at 100% to your general fund. The POMV payout, you can see, comes from the earnings reserve account to the general fund. The dotted line below that would be the CBR draws as necessary, all going to the general fund. And from the general fund, you'd pay your 20% royalty, 20% PO, 20% of the POMV, and 20% of the royalty for dividends. And that was a lot. I said really fast.
Are there questions from committee members? So this slide depicts where the money currently resides, how this bill proposes to manage the money, and it tracks where the money currently goes and how the changes will make it flow. Any questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carpenter, as you look at the bottom right where you're talking about the dividends, that's what everybody's really interested in, and that's what they want to know, whether you're a person that's unemployed or on the lower end of the spectrum or even those that are up in the higher areas. As we look at this bill, we see that over the next 3 years or so, we've got a permanent fund dividend that's roughly $1,000, and it's frozen there. What happens to the 20% POMV and the royalty, the 20% royalty? What will happen to the dividends after fiscal year 2019?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, if you look back one slide, you can see the projection for the dividend after, which remains at $1,000 roughly under this formula.
Indefinite.
Well, I can't say that, Senator.
Well, that's what I'm getting from the slide, though. It's indefinite.
Through the chair, through this time period, it's projected at 1,000. As production were to decline and royalty would decline along with it, you would have some drop. Sorry, offsetting that, though, would be the 20% of the POMV, which in theory, as the permanent fund grows in value, you'd be offsetting that. So it depends on the interplay of production decline versus investment earnings growth. But under this scenario, $1,000 seems indefinite.
No further questions, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Carpenter, there are a variety of variables that affect, under this proposal, the dividend. Is that accurate?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
And so that's the earnings from the permanent fund, the production times the price, so the royalties that are coming through. And so the forecast is based on the spring projections. Are those spring projections above or below what we're currently experiencing? Do you know?
I would say they're below, but growing in line with the spring projections.
So, Senator Olson, I think maybe we can ask the Revenue Commissioner a little bit more about that so that Alaskans understand that we're taking these variables and trying to anticipate where a dividend would go. Is that fair?
It is, and as you look at all the moving variables that are out there, whether it's going to be production, whether it's going to be the percentage of PUMV, and that the return on that as well as the royalty that we're getting. Certainly, so we have something in a, within a bracket that we can tell our constituents that this is what we were pretty sure is going to happen.
Thank you. Do we have a final slide, Mr. Carpenter?
Madam Chairman, the this would be the next slide. Two graphs. This depicts this demonstrates is the revenue limit that is put in place against the percent of market value payout. The graph to the left depicts what would happen without the revenue limit. So I can walk through this here. The bottom bar, the red bar, is your non-volatile revenue, such as all your corporate income tax, et cetera, et cetera. Next bar up would be your POMV payout, and followed by your blue bars, which would be your volatile revenue, such as oil and gas, and the orange would be a CBR use to fill the deficit. This is all for one fiscal year, FY17. The black line depicts the budget. So what happens here is the green bars are consistent in the, over that price scenario, which is on the bottom. I'm sorry, I'm doing a very good job here. The bottom part of the graph is the price of oil. So as the price of oil grows, your volatile revenue, the blue bars, grows. Does that make sense? Okay. So at a certain point, $85, you're breaking through that budget line, and you have, from there on, you'd have what would be surplus revenue under this scenario. There was concern that once those prices are reached, that there'd be a rule in place on what to do with that surplus revenue, and the revenue limit was proposed by the governor's office to offset the POMV payout on a dollar-for-dollar basis at a point of $1.2 billion. So when volatile revenue reaches $1.2 billion, the POMV payout is reduced dollar for dollar past that point. And that's the next graph to the right. It depicts that when you reach about $75, $80, the green bars start to decline, which thereby eliminates that surplus revenue and basically pushes it out to a point of $110 before you actually have that surplus revenue. So the idea is when you have windfall years, that the POMV is reduced to offset by those windfall years.
Mr. Carpenter, then if it's reduced and not paid out, does it sit in the earnings reserve account?
But that leads to your next slide, which is your savings rule, that at a point where you exceed the budget, now that it's split 50% CBR, 50% to the principal of the permit fund.
Brief at ease. we're back on the record. Mr. Carpenter, I was talking about the green bars, and as the green bars go down, that means, as I understand it, the money would stay in the ERA. Could you tell us what happens when that money stays in the ERA?
Yes, Madam Chair, I misunderstood your question. So as the revenue limit kicks in, the ERA, the POMV payout is reduced, and that money would stay in the earnings reserve account and the permanent fund, which would then provide additional assets for investment, which would cause the permanent fund to grow, which would then impact the dividend itself and cause the dividend to grow.
That makes sense to everyone? The money is saved. It's not, even though it's available, like always, for spend, it's sitting to help drive the dividend up in savings. Is that accurate?
Yes, ma'am.
Any questions on the savings rule? Senator Olson.
On that rule, as you look at the idea that we're going to have an increase in dividends, you need to go ahead and save. But let's just say that we have another dump in the financial scene that happened back in 2008. And we go through the seven-year cycle again. What's going to happen to the dividend under those circumstances?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, any financial crisis like we had before will impact the dividend negatively.
Significantly negatively? As much as it did back in 2008?
Well, there was potential back in 2008 for us to have a zero ERA with no dividend. So, there is potential for that, yes.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, if I might, the difference in this formula, taking 20% percent of market value and 20% royalty, takes care of many quadrants, and it does diversify risk because the dividend is blended now with the royalty times price and with the dividend dollars. And so it would react a bit differently. The worst-case scenario for an Alaskan, as today, is if the price of return on investment drops significantly, like in 2008, that the dividend would be adversely affected in a huge way. But if production remained the same and price had stayed up like it did in 2008, then the dividend would be higher than under a only percent of market value from the earnings. Does that make sense?
It doesn't. I think the issue that I hear what Mr. Carpenter said, what you're saying, is that it would be a significant, but not as significant as it could have been otherwise had we stayed under the status quo.
It's blended from two different sources, so it should diversify some of the risk, but it also is diversified on the upside. If you're diversified on the downside, that means when it swings up, it won't swing up as dramatically either. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carpenter, could you describe the dividend amount under this proposal and how less volatile the swings will be compared to the current plan and why that is, even though it's being reduced?
Sure. Senator Hoffman, through the chair, the current formula is based on a five-year earnings calculation, the previous 5 years, and it takes 20% of that. As a particularly bad year drops off, as we all experienced, we had very low dividends that then spiked when we lost a low year. Under this scenario, you would maintain, given that it's a five-year payout of the entire balance of the permanent fund, not just the earnings, you're going to have very stable payouts, and 20% of that very stable payout is going to maintain a stable dividend.
So people of Alaska can better predict the ranges of their permanent fund dividend under this new plan.
Absolutely, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Painter, did you have anything to add?
I did not. Thank you.
Thank you. If I can invite Commissioner Hoffbeck to the microphone. Commissioner, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, the administration proposed an annuity-style draw in a way to close some of Alaska's fiscal gap and diversify our revenue stream. Do you have comments on the CS that's before us today?
Yes, Madam Chair. As you've just stated, this is a different bill than what the administration originally proposed. But it does accomplish the purposes that we had set out within that bill, which was to have a systematic way for using the earnings reserve that protected both the corpus of the fund and the dividend. And this does accomplish that. And we're pleased with this bill. We think it represents the best of cooperation, particularly thank this Senate Finance and Senator McKinnon for the amount of work you did in putting this bill together. It does what we had set out to accomplish, and as the governor said, it was written in pencil, not pen. And I think this is what happens when it's written in pencil. You can come to a bill that works for everybody.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, the committee had questions about the opportunity cost of not doing this. Let's set this aside for a year. Let's wait. We have passed a balanced budget, and that balanced budget requires a significant draw from our savings. And in cooperation with minority and majority, Senate and House, we were able to get the three-quarter vote needed to access the CBR that has a lower rate of return than the earnings reserve account, which benefited Alaska as a way to move forward, per your administration. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, Madam Chair.
If you have to. I'm not supposing that you're asking for that. But tell us how you calculated the opportunity cost so committee members can consider that in their evaluation of this bill.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. There's really three components that drive that change the equation. Whether you spend it from the CBR or the permanent fund earnings, there's some delta there because of the difference in the return on those two accounts. But the big issues really are how much do we spend, how large is the budget, what other revenue sources do we have. And in the case of the Permanent Fund Protection Act, how much do we spend for supporting government and how much do we spend for the dividend? And those are really the big drivers. So when we looked at the opportunity cost, we looked at about a $700 million difference between the dividend payout under status quo and under the Permanent Fund Protection Act. We looked at another $300 to $400 million in new revenues, and then the one that's still out there being worked on is the oil and gas tax credits and the impact that has going forward. So we're looking at $1 billion to $1.5 billion, depending upon how all the numbers worked out, difference between just status quo versus, and that's already factoring in the cuts that the legislature's already made, versus if we implement the Permanent Fund Protection Act and some of the other programs. The Permanent Fund Protection Act, the biggest issue is going to be the $700 million plus some investment return difference. $700 million at 5.25% rate of return is about $40 million dollars that would be lost and out of the system forever. We're at 7.25. I'm sorry, 7.25. So we're looking at $50 million plus that would be out of the system forever. With the other pieces, we were looking at about $100 million that were out of the system and would not be recovered in the future.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, the current bill proposes to remove $3 billion from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. What's the opportunity cost lost on spending that money?
Madam Chair, it's in that $50 million range because of the fact that we would not have the other adjustments associated with the other components. The totality of the governor's package with the other revenues plus the credit reform is in the $100 million range.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy?
The figure of $200 million is being talked about earlier. Just trying to understand where that came from and where this is coming from.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I've invited Alexi Painter. I had asked Legislative Finance to support or demystify the assertion from the administration that there was a $200 million opportunity cost that would be lost if we use $3 billion from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Mr. Painter, can you help me?
Madam Chair, for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. That $200 million number, I believe, was the difference between without a permanent fund plan, if the deficit were filled with the CBR rather than the ERA, because there was some discussion in the legislature of using the ERA instead of the CBR. So in the absence of the Permanent Fund Protection Act, which allows the CBR to be invested for a higher return, then there would be a significant difference in investment revenue between using the ERA and CBR. And that amount is about $200 million. So I think that's where that particular calculation came from.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Senator Dunleavy.
It's the calculation is based upon the CBR being invested differently?
Correct.
And the elimination of the $3 billion. Earning potential.
Okay, just a question, though. Theoretically, you could approach the investment of the CBR as an isolated. You can isolate that investment so that you can get that return you're looking at without having to do anything with the PMMD or PM. Yeah.
Mr. Painter.
Yeah. Through the chair, that is correct. However, that would require statutory change. Right. That currently the CBR has to be invested conservatively if it is going to be used within the next 5 years.
Right. I just want to clarify something, because I think some have portrayed it as if this bill passes, you address that opportunity cost. But in reality, you can do it with any legislation to address that one issue, how we invest the CBR.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, for that difference between using the CBR and ERA, that's correct. That's the primary source of that. There is the opportunity cost, as the commissioner mentioned, of the dividends and other factors.
Right. There's opportunity costs also of not reducing the budget further as well.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Machicki.
So, Mr. Painter, with the difference between the cap, which is approximately $700 million, and I'll give you a wide range of between $100 and $200 million on the statutory change, so that the CBR is invested similarly to the earnings reserve, the difference between not passing this bill or other or another statute is between $800 and $900 million. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Any further questions for Mr. Painter? Thank you, Mr. Painter. Commissioner, you had a different outline for opportunity cost from the administration's perspective, and I knew that there was the assertion of the 200, so we wanted to make sure that that was on the table. Do you have any further comments on the CS before us?
No, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from committee members? So basically, for the general public, the bill before us establishes a percent of market value, and it pools all of our assets together to generate revenue, and that revenue would go to the people of Alaska in the form of a dividend calculation that would be different than today. 20% of what the percent of market value rolls off, plus 20% of royalties, so the price of per barrel oil and the production that comes to the general fund. And it guarantees a $1,000 dividend for 3 years as we transition. It sets a revenue limit of $1.2 billion. And for every dollar above that, I'm just trying to get this right onto the record, for every dollar above that of oil revenue that comes in, a dollar is reduced from the percent of market value available to be spent. And that money stays in the earning reserve to help drive up future dividends. It creates a savings rule in a high price environment that legislators may contribute 50% of that dollar to the permanent fund and 50 cents of that dollar to the CBR to pay back the money we've been taking out of it now. And it transfers management of all of our funds, creating an investment scenario of pooling our assets, all the money that Alaska has in a variety of savings accounts, CBR, earnings reserve, the corpus of the permanent fund, and it pools those so that we can get a higher rate of return under the management at the permanent fund corporation. Is that how everybody understands the bill before us? Any further questions from the Commissioner of Revenue? Senator Machicki.
Kind of more of a statement, but I did ask Revenue to provide me with what the difference would have been had we changed the CBR investment protocol 10 years ago, and I believe the difference was about $1.6 billion. So when you think about how investments work over the long term, this is something we should have done a long time ago. I know the effort was to keep the CBR more fluid, or more liquid, if you will. But that practice has cost the state of Alaska considerably over the last many years, just 1.6 in the last decade, just on the difference between those different rates of return between the CBR and the earnings reserve.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, comment?
Madam Chair, Senator Machicki, no, those numbers are accurate. I mean, the management mandate for the CBR was different than for the permanent fund. We did have to remain more liquid, particularly in the years where we had substantial draws on the CBR. And so those were constraints that held down some of our rates of return. By co-managing these funds, they won't be co-mingled, but co-managed, alongside of the other funds within the permanent fund, the hope is that it would generate returns similar to what the permanent fund is returning. One caveat being, of course, is there will have to be, in the current year, some liquidity measures taken to make sure that we can meet the cash calls during the current year.
Other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hoffbeck, as you look at the permanent fund management, is made up of personalities that are appointed, and is it in your view that it was a wise decision to go ahead and have that CBR management be transferred over to the permanent fund corporation management?
To the chair, Senator Hoffman, there's an opportunity available by transferring that over there. If it didn't transfer, would that be a catastrophe? No. I mean, I think my staff does a very good job of managing the funds. But there are opportunities by merging these two that we don't have as two separate funds. And this was something that Senator McKinnon and I had talked about before this ever came up in the bill, that they're to look at the opportunities of this co-management might have.
So the governor has no heartburn over?
Senator Hoffman, no.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Commissioner Hoffbeck. If I could invite Chris Pope with the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to the microphone. You can identify yourself for the record and your affiliation.
Good afternoon, Chris Pogue. I work for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. I'm the general counsel, and it's a pleasure to be here. It was a really short walk today, about a block. I guess I have a few broad overview points I'd like to make, but I probably should start by inviting questions if there are questions that you folks have for the Permanent Fund Corporation as it relates to this bill.
Mr. Pogue, are you up for co-managing pooled investments for Alaskans?
As this committee knows, since the legislature created the permanent fund, our sole responsibility is to invest and manage assets. So the more assets, the better. So yes, what happens, what we see as an investment shop with a 10-year horizon who has $50 billion behind it, that when we're able to write big checks for investments that are long-term, we're able to get better economics from that. So by making us larger, you make us better. I guess I wanted to make sort of two points about the bill, and one is which is a percentage of market value draw is very common among endowments and in universities. They range from 4 to 5%. This one is 5.25%. It is, however, based on 5 of the preceding 6 fiscal years, so its effective rate isn't probably likely to be 5.25%. The trend is for markets to incline, so you artificially deflate that value. But the second point I wanted to make is Section 1 of the bill gives the permanent fund a lot of safety and comfort that 3 years from now, this legislature will reevaluate the use and the earnings and the earnings reserve account to decide and evaluate whether or not there's an overconsumption, an underconsumption, or we're right at the sweet spot. So those reevaluations are important, and given that we're a block away, we'd be happy to provide that input, because markets do have trends, and they're hard to see from today what they'll be in the future. But 3 years from now, we'll have a better perspective on whether or not 5.25% is the right level.
Senator Machicki.
Is your sort of vision of how this the performance will be reported, would it become sort of a subset of the annual Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation report, or would it sort of be reported through the Department of Revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I believe the legislation speaks to that. Section 5, starting on line 13, there's a requirement that the Permanent Fund Corporation by March 15th provide a report to the legislature that talks about the balance of the fund on July 1 and June 30th from the prior fiscal year. So how did it look at the start of the year, and how did it look at the end of the year? So I think it envisions us providing your report. We'll tell you what the nominal, the real, and the realized returns were of your portion of the assets we manage that are the CBR. This already happens. We have the main fund and the earnings reserve. They're pooled together. So now we'll, and some portion of mental health trust funds. So now we'll essentially have four pools that make up one large pool.
Follow up, Senator Machicki.
Just one last question. Do you envision a separate asset allocation, or do you envision that all of the funds will be similarly invested, or perhaps exactly invested?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, good question. Our board at its last quarterly meeting said that if and when the legislature takes action to change the way the earnings reserve account is accessed, we will likely hold a special board meeting to consider our current asset allocation and determine whether or not it can continue to stay at its current allocation. When I talked about making long-term investments, those are illiquid investments, so we'll have to determine what the rate of spend will be for the CBR by the legislature to decide whether or not the asset allocation we currently use is too illiquid or not. But we're going to reevaluate that question, and we intend to start out using the exact same asset allocation that's used for the main fund and the earnings reserve fund. And we're hopeful that we can manage the liquidity or cash needs that the legislature has for this fixed draw as well as any CBR appropriations.
Senator Machicki.
Just on a follow-up, you maintain a proportion of the permanent fund corpus in liquidity as well. Is that correct?
We do. We have currently 6% in cash and interest.
So last question, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Can that liquidity be transferred for a draw from one account to the other without affecting the various asset allocations so that you have to maintain less liquidity that's sort of directed toward the CBR?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the question is, it depends. Our board has set up what's called a risk dashboard. There's allocations. We have authority to act within those. There's the green zone, which is the authorized zone, the yellow zone, where the CIO and the executive director get involved, and then the red zone at which our board needs to be involved. So if we have a drawdown that puts that asset allocation too high or too low, it will trigger one of those. So if it's a cash draw within the boundaries, that it's not a problem. If it's a large cash draw, then we would have to possibly make accommodations by realizing an investment, or alternatively, possibly one thing being considered right now is a line of credit or letter of credit that would allow us to solve a short-term cash need but allow those less liquid assets to maintain in their current profile.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions from committee members? It's my understanding from past meetings that we've had the department before us that we are allowing the Department of Revenue to work cooperatively with the Permanent Fund Corporation to set up a way to smoothly transition this particular management. Is that your understanding?
Yes, it is.
Senator Dunleavy.
Chair, are there any concerns about the bill that you have or the Permanent Fund Corporation has?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, there's two answers to that. One is Our job, as I said, is to invest and manage the assets. The decision for you to access your earnings reserve account is a policy call. It's not our call. If you and you have throughout this, our board had a meeting in January where we evaluated the proposals. We've been provided an opportunity to look at each bill as it takes a change. We've provided input. So we think that we've been given a great opportunity to help you make an informed decision on how to spend this on a sustainable level going forward. But the decision to draw and how much to draw is yours. We think this will work, and we're excited to see that 3 years from now we'll have a chance to come before you and tell you how well it's working or whether or not it needs some fine-tuning.
Follow-up, Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the Permanent Fund Corporation? Thank you, Mr. Pope.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki, we were provided two documents that are labeled fiscal notes. We will not be adopting these fiscal notes, but I do want to discuss them with committee members. Because of the sequence of events, we cannot incorporate new fiscal notes into the budget this year. Those fiscal notes, the conference committee was done. We've passed the budget, and so these are advisory. They will have to come back in the form of a supplemental to the legislature, but I wanted to get on the record the difference in approach that the fiscal notes take. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both of these fiscal notes are related to the projected increase and decrease in management fees due to the changes in investment. The first one is Department of Revenue. Appropriation is the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The allocation is APFC operations, and the OMB component number is 109. This is a $14,800,000 note from the 1105 Permanent Fund Gross Fund. And again, that's the projected increase in management fees due to the change in how the funds will be managed. The second fiscal note, Madam Chair, is Department of Revenue, Taxation, and Treasury, Treasury Division. The OMB component number is 121. This is a decrement. All are for 2017 and on out years through FY22. It's the same for this one. This was included in the governor's FY17 request. This is a decrement of $130,000, and this is essentially the management fees, external management fees that would go away, and all other costs associated with managing the CBR would be allocated to other funds in the Treasury. The total would be $1.4 million, and if you subtract that $130,000, that is the difference, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So we'll be looking for some actuals on management. If the department is managing quite a bit of this internally, then we would expect to see a downturn in staff and staffing positions at the Department of Revenue, but we'll let them come back as we work through this transition should this piece of legislation advance. Any questions on the advisory financial information that we've just received? Comments? From committee members on the bill before us. Senator Dunleavy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It's it's really more just a comment on the concept. This is the final concept that we'll be looking at here today, and I'm assuming a motion will be made to move the bill. But you know, it's just an interesting discussion on opportunity costs. There's different ways of looking at opportunity costs. We saw that here in the interaction just a little while ago. I know that many of us share this same concern that we have opportunity costs we can realize through continued reduction in the budget. And you know, that's a question I have, is human nature being as it is, the tendency would be to, if you find a new revenue stream, there's less pressure to reduce the budget. I'm not saying that we won't do it. There'll just be less pressure to do it. And there are folks that believe that the Senate went too far in its budget this year in terms of reductions, and there's others that believe we didn't go far enough. And even with the $400 million-plus reduction, personally, I know others believe we still have a lot more to do in that area. So with the adoption of this plan, everything works out. We're still at over $1 billion-plus, I think, gap between our revenues and our expenditures. So the question for me going down the road is, once again, dealing with human nature, how are we going to fill that gap? And, you know, my concern is that if we're not going to look at taxes this year, we'll look at taxes next year to fill the gap. How are we going to keep the growth of government, even if we didn't add anything, how do we keep the growth of government in check? That's going to be another difficult process. And then there's the opportunity cost that I think is also genuine. When you take X amount of money out of the economy, if there is a capping of the dividend, there too is an opportunity cost, I think, for the private sector. And so I think in the end, the state government wins, and I think it's going to keep growing, and I think it's going to do so at the expense of the private sector. I hope I'm wrong. This would be one of those that I'd be thrilled to be wrong on, but I think it's going to take some pressure off of us in terms of really tackling the budget issues for next year. I have some real concerns about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem is the deficit. You know, I think that if we don't adopt this particular piece of legislation, we will place ourselves in a much more difficult financial place in order to make the proper decision, because there'll be billions of dollars at stake. I think the last time that I saw a major piece of legislation of this magnitude was when we passed the constitutional budget reserve account legislation, and that was important because without putting the settlement money into a fund, those dollars would have been spent, and we are still using that tool even today to meet the state's needs. The restructuring of the permanent fund does several things. First of all, I think it protects the permanent fund, although maybe a lot smaller, but it stabilizes the permanent fund, and it gives the state of Alaska and the people of Alaska a long-term cash flow in order to meet its needs. What we do after that to address the gap still remains to be seen, but we can't sit back and say and do nothing and say that there's a problem because government will grow. We have to step up to the plate and do what we can today with the knowledge that we have. And and I think that's what the vast majority of Alaskans are looking for us to accomplish, to come up with a plan. It may not be perfect. We will not fill the complete gap, but I think we have a responsibility to do what we can today and not put off that decision tomorrow because of fears that we have about what future legislators will do. We are here, we are elected, and we should act.
Other comments from committee members? Senator Machicki.
I went back and listened to the transcripts when the permanent fund was created, just because you hear a lot on the street about it was created so that it could spin off a dividend to help people with their bills, or folks that don't have trouble with their daily bills to buy something special in October every year. But I didn't hear that in the transcripts. What I heard was it was designed for a rainy day to help support government when things got tight. Well, last I checked, things are pretty tight. The bill we're talking about does not fill the gap. It fills about two-thirds of the gap. It is an absolute requirement that we continue to cut, that we continue to make our government more efficient. And this, for me, it doesn't take the pressure off at all. Without doing anything, I think we've said it enough times that I'm not sure folks understand that the permanent fund likely goes away in about 5 years. The permanent fund dividend likely goes away in about 5 years. With this bill, it could be maintained in perpetuity. And when we talk about opportunity costs, it's generally specifically about an earnings differential. That $200 million a year, even if it's $140 million a year of not changing how the allocation is changed. That's an entire program. I mean, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that goes away. We also have cut hundreds of millions of liability out in 247 that we're probably going to vote on today, oil and gas credits. We've cut the budget. We've got more to go. But the key to surviving a downturn that results in whatever our gap is right now, $3.5 billion, is that we use all the tools available to us. This is one of them. It may be a temporary solution. Things may turn around, but if not, we're using our investment of the last 40 years to continue to manage down the size of our government, continue to make it as cost efficient as possible, continue to cut where we can, yet we're not having to reach into the pockets of everyday Alaskans on an amount of money that would fill a gap that might keep us from cutting further in the future. I think this keeps an incredible amount of pressure on us to operate efficiently. So nobody likes that we're the legislature talking about, some of you have been in the legislature when you talked about use of the permanent fund in the past. If we're the ones to go in that direction, no one wants to. I certainly didn't sign up 4 years ago when I was elected to say, I want to be the guy. I want to be the guy to be the first one to have to use the earnings of the permanent fund. But the reality of it is that's where we are, and I think it's a responsible thing to do. It's a very tough vote, but I know it's why my district sent me here, to make those tough decisions and to be well-informed in those decisions and to make sure we're not being wasteful in any one of these departments. So I'm not excited about this bill going to the floor, but duty calls.
Comments from other committee members? Senator Machicki, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 128 Finance 29-GS2859/U from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill 128 Finance /U moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the documents. Brief at ease. we're back on the record, I wanted to take a moment to thank our own legislative finance team, both Rob Carpenter, Alexi Painter, and David Teal have spent countless hours modeling and trying to answer questions, along with my own staff, Chief of Staff Laura Pierre, Laura Kramer. I apologize. Give me a sock. Legislative Legal, Doug Gardner, and his team that for many, many weeks worked round the clock with very little sleep, away from their families. The Department of Revenue, Commissioner Hoffbeck, Director Alper, and his team trying to catch up or slow us down or speed us up, and all of his team. Attorney General Richards, who originally introduced the bill and the annuity model, and his work and his team's work on the sovereign wealth models around the world in looking at managing assets as well as costs. Who did I forget, gentlemen? I appreciate the governor in advancing a concept that is difficult to consider, let alone advance out of this committee. I appreciate Senator McGuire, who this bill, though it says it's a governor's bill, was thought about, discussed, investigated by Senator McGuire at the start of last year, not this year, but last year. She introduced the percent of market value concept and tying the dividend to the royalty stream so that the people of Alaska understood where the money is coming from, both for state government and for the dividend, and understanding when the prices fell, why state government no longer had service money available to it, but the dividend was still going out. So, again, thank you to Senator McGuire and her team. With that, is there anything else to come before the committee? We're adjourned.